Nevada Governor Brian Sandoval, a centrist Republican, announced today that he was removing himself from consideration as President Obama's next nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court. Sandoval's name was being floated today, even as Senate Republicans have said they will refuse to hold hearings on any nominee.
Joining us now to break down the latest news is political science professor Kimmy King of the University of North Texas. Kimmy, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be back, everybody. Remember, if you're listening, support public radio.
Thank you so much. Well, let's look at this concept here that's being floated of a Republican generally regarded as a guy who can work across the aisle, I guess. This could be anything from, let's kind of troll the Republicans from the White House. Let's see if they'd bite at this idea of Republican, to a serious thought that, yeah, they really would nominate this governor, this Republican governor. How do you read this, Kimmy?
So part of what it is throwing the initial challenge out there to the Republicans to make it clear that President Obama is going to continue to think outside the box and try to throw them off balance. And so there's a real question of how sincere it really is. I mean, recognize that he is not done with his term as Nevada governor until 2019. So it's also kind of an interesting way to remove a Republican governor out and open that up for a special election. The larger issue is the extent to which Republicans take Sandoval to the woodshed and say, we need to make ourselves very clear that if you want to think about what your political aspirations will be, and if any of them involve elected office, you are going to need us on your side. So it really poses an interesting counter challenge, and it puts in the limelight this concern that Obama is saying that this is an obstructionist Senate, and it forces the Republicans to have to make the next move in this critical chess game.
Well, Governor Sandoval was pretty quick to say thanks, but no thanks, not interested, happy with my gig here as governor. But this concept, and most of our Supreme Court justices lately are coming from the court system. This is a guy who has been a judge, but he's a sitting governor. And I imagine in a confirmation hearing, that would give a lot of things for both sides to look at, because he, as opposed to a judge who can say, oh, I'm just reading the cases, I'm just ruling on this, he has a lot of stuff, or somebody from a similar position would have a lot of actual policy decisions on their record.
Yes, although it's interesting because, remember, O'Connor had political experience in the Arizona legislature, and that made her a little savvy as she headed on to the bench. But there were those who were critical of her. I would say your best bet for where President Obama is going to go with this is he's going to go with someone who's tried and true off of probably the Court of Appeals. He'll be looking for somebody in the not-so-distant past, because you don't want him to have so much of a record that someone could go after then. There'll be somebody out of the Court of Appeals who is a moderate, who would be an interesting choice that makes everybody kind of go, now what about that one? And that's why everybody's floating the name of Sri Srinivasan. I'm just going to destroy that name. Sri Srinivasan, who's a member of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, Scalia's old stomping ground. He was already nominated and put forward and confirmed back in 2013, so he has enough of a record. And most importantly, Cruz and Rubio voted for him.
Looking at what we're hearing from Senate Republicans, Mitch McConnell and others saying, we're not going to have a confirmation hearing, we're not going to have a committee hearing, we're not going to meet with your nominee no matter who it is. You can reincarnate the best qualities of everyone who's ever been in the Supreme Court, nominate them, we're not meeting with them. If I'm hearing that and I'm a potential nominee, am I really going to want to take this? Am I going to want to be in this weird position of basically limbo? Who would want this nomination?
Well, absolutely, and that may be part of the fear, but at the same time, remember, you're one of only 124 individuals in history who has the ability to live on well beyond your time and leave a legacy. And that's why this is so important. In some ways, this is more high stakes than the election of the next president. Remember, the average age of a Supreme Court justice is somewhere around 79 right now, and so it has become a tradition of serving at least 25 years on the court after having been nominated. And so even just the possibility of it is something that a number of people would take quite seriously. Maybe not now, but maybe later.
That reminds me, just earlier this week, we heard from someone with a group who said, hey, we need to change things. We need term limits, 18-year terms for Supreme Court justices. Because of that, there are longer lifespans, justices serving 20, 30 years. Do you think that, I know it's probably a long shot that it would happen, but if it were to happen, do you think that would lower some of the stakes on these nominations?
It might. The first thing you're going to have to do, though, is go back and amend the Constitution, because it was always intended that they serve for life, and they can't even have their salary reduced. So when, like, the income tax came on way back in the early 1900s, the Supreme Court justices didn't have to pay taxes because that would have lowered their salary. I mean, we've always held Supreme Court justices in this very hallowed position. We call it the myth of the robe, right? That you look at these folks as being very wise. So perhaps that's a possibility for term limits, but you know what? Gosh, if we can't even get term limits on members of Congress, I'm not really sure how people are going to feel about the Supreme Court, because certainly people would have loved to have had Scalia be on until the end of time.
We're talking to Kimmy King, professor of political science at the University of North Texas, about the latest in the effort to find a new U.S. Supreme Court justice. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Should the president nominate someone? Who should it be? Should the Senate hold a hearing? Should they confirm? Should this all wait for the next president?
We're continuing our discussion about Supreme Court politics with Kimmy King. She's a professor of political science at the University of North Texas.
You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Should President Obama make a nomination, or should President fill-in-the-blank make their nomination when they come into office next January? Should the Senate pay attention if the president makes a nomination? Should they consider whoever he nominates and give it an up or down vote? And who's on your short list? Any names you want to name? Call 800-642-1234. Kimmy, do you see this becoming an issue in the presidential race if the standoff keeps standoffing?
It already is an issue in the presidential race. I mean, I think that it's maybe the most interesting issue at the moment. Part of what it is that we are in the middle of one of the most contentious presidential elections in history, and now we've thrown another branch of government into that controversy, and it fundamentally addresses this question of what is the position of the American people about the direction you want the country to take? Do you want it to be politics as usual, or are you ready to take on some kind of change? And if you are, what does that change look like? Does that change look like a Trump? Does it look like a Cruz? Does it look like a Sanders? Does it look like a Supreme Court justice that's a Republican, that's the only way that justice can get through? And so I think that's why everyone is so tapped into this.
You mentioned that almost mythical status of the Supreme Court. Is that diminished when it's the kind of political football it's been, especially since, I don't know, the 1980s or so?
You know, everybody talks about the fact that Supreme Court nominations have been controversial, but the reality is judicial nominations go back to controversy, to Marbury versus Madison in 1803. I mean, it's the stuff you learned about in high school. In that particular case, you had an incoming president, Jefferson, who refused to sign off on a commission done by Adams, who was the outgoing president. You had the last-minute appointment himself of Chief Justice John Marshall, who was supposed to get the appointments done. He himself had been a last-minute appointment. And as a consequence, the reason why we have judicial review in the first place out of the courts is over a nomination battle. So it has always been the case that this stuff has been messy. Has it been uglier than usual since the 1980s? Absolutely. But that actually really goes back to 1968 and the nomination of Abe Fortas. So we can really take it back even a little bit further than the 1980s.
Let's bring in a caller now. We've got Sonia on the line in Cleveland. Sonia, hi. Sonia?
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
I just think that the Supreme Court should have that person nominated as soon as possible, because the Constitution requires that they have 9
All right, Sonia, thanks for calling in. Kimmy, first of all, does the Constitution specify the number of Supreme Court justices?
Actually, it doesn't. The number of justices has ranged over time. Congress gets to set, in essence, the jurisdiction of the court, and so they can add on additional federal courts, but there's nothing magical about that number 9. We've been at 5, we've been 6, we were 9, we were up to 10 right after the Civil War, back to 9, and then people, you know, grandparents may recall that during the New Deal, Franklin Delano Roosevelt tried to pack the court with an additional 6 justices because he was unhappy about the rulings that the court was issuing. So there's not really anything magical about it, but it is critical this term. Of all the terms that this could have happened, you have cases on the docket where Scalia's vote made a difference. And so in the abortion case out of Texas, it probably doesn't make a difference in that particular case. I'll be curious to see the direction the court takes it there. Kennedy's the swing voter. But we have an issue regarding health care and whether religious nonprofits, including charities, have to have a contraceptive mandate. The unions have a fair share fee that's being considered. Affirmative action is back on the court's docket, and it hopefully this term was thought to be resolved, and now that's been thrown into the air. They have religious schools that are supposed to be thinking that they can start being eligible for publicly funded grants. That case is now up in the air. Climate change, immigration. I mean, do you want me to go on?
Well, actually, we've got a caller, I think, Kimmy, who wants to bring up one more possibility. Jill is with us in New Berlin. Hi, Jill.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. My main question is, what would happen in the event of a contested election like we had in Gore with the recount in Florida? If there was a contested election, it came to the Supreme Court, or if there was voter fraud alleged or something like that. And
Jill, I want to jump in and bring Kimmy on because we're almost done. What if Bush versus Gore was 4-4? No,
wow.
Tying vote, no tiebreaker.
That is just such a great point on the part of your caller. I mean, yeah, absolutely. And that's part of the imperative for moving this forward. I mean, the question becomes, how long do you wait? Remember, you don't automatically become a Supreme Court justice after you're nominated. Scalia's own nomination himself took almost 3 months. And that was in, you know, not an ugly partisan environment like we have here. I mean, you could have indefinite delays as a result of something like that if you had a contested election again. So, excellent point.
A chilling vision of things to come. Kimmy, thanks for joining us today.
Take it easy. Support public radio.
Thanks. That's political science professor Kimmy King from the University of North Texas talking to us about the Supreme Court vacancy. What happens next?